You are listening to the News Project Podcast for the week of March 15th, 2021, brought to you by GNAT TV. This podcast brings you these stories. Manchester machine makers make a first place. It's maple syrup time in Vermont, and the Manchester Music Hall to be taken down.
What do you do with a robot that shoots plastic rings, picks up things, and moves around not only back and forth, but side to side? If you're a member of the Manchester Machine Makers, you develop the software and the hardware to take your machine to the state's first tech challenge, where you win a first place in the Think Award category, which was held Saturday, March 13th. About 30 teams competed at the event, coming from across Vermont and from several other states. The day before the big event, the team, consisting of students from Burn Burton Academy, Long Trail School, and the Dorset School, showed off their creation and put it through its paces at the former Bennington County Courthouse in Manchester Village. That's where we met up with several of the students on the team and one of their coaches, Mike Cole.
This is the robot that we designed from a blank piece of paper about starting 6 months ago. We had a challenge that was announced by the Worldwide First Tech Challenge organization. And our team, then of three students, expanded itself to have five students on the team from three Manchester area schools, organized as a 4-H club. And we began the process of designing this robot that would have to hopefully be able to accomplish all of the different scoreable objectives that the game allowed. It would operate in a match that had 2.5 minutes, the first 30 seconds of which would be the bot operating completely autonomously without any operator involvement. And it has to do its set of tasks. And then the following 2 minutes, where the driver is interacting with the robot and using it to play the game. This year with COVID, we've overcome the challenges of the pandemic and the safeties that we've needed to follow by doing all of the design for this remotely from one another. So we had our last in-person meeting doing any of the work on this in early November. So through all of December, January, February, and really up until Monday of this week, we had not met together as individuals for all of that period.
Several of the team members explained to us what was going on.
Kind of just put together by all of us, we separated it into different sub-assemblies. Like, I worked on the intake and the wobble grabber and the barrel. Isaac also worked on the magazine. He also worked on the shooter a lot. Jason was working on the color sensor. Taylor, who isn't here today, was working on the drive base. Alex did a lot of the programming, and so did Isaac. And so we all put that together, and so now we have the intake, which is kind of where everything is going to start, which is wheels, axles, chain system, pulley system. And so those are Gecko wheels, which are like compliant wheels, but a little different. They're harder on the inside or all the way through. And then as it goes up, there is a top layer of wheels and a bottom layer of wheels, which spin opposite to each other, which kind of makes a weird kind of, I want to say conveyor belt, but that's wrong. Anyone have a better word for what we could, just how we could describe how the wheels work?
I think you're doing great.
I've just been calling it a wheel ramp, which it brings it up with the top wheels bringing it up as well, which then goes into the barrel, which we made out of a pitcher, just because it fit the rings so well.
Why is this?
It's stuck. The arm got.
Oh, shoot.
The arm got caught in between it. The arm is moving back too far, so it got caught in between the different sections of the
controller, which is hooked up to a phone. And then this phone uses a direct Wi-Fi connection to the control hubs on the bots. So the controls go through here into the control hubs. And then the control hub is connected all of the wiring to the rest of the bot, such as the servos and the motors, and it gives those the power commands on what they need to do, and is also connected to the sensors and such for the autonomous. The most difficult challenge I think that we've had this year is the integration of the bot, both in hardware and software, because as we weren't able to meet in person, as Charlotte mentioned, it was very difficult to get the parts integrated and working together, each of us designed a working part on its own, but to put all of those parts together into a larger bot that worked was the most challenging piece of this.
The team wasn't always able to meet as one, and even today, Alex Rutens, an eighth grader from the Dorset School, took part remotely at the demonstration.
I'd say the hardest part for me has probably been, yeah, the integration, and also just debugging, getting it to work, because since I'm not there, I can't actually see what they're seeing. So, for example, if they're programming in a specific way on the bot, and on bot Java, where they're connected to the bot, then I can't connect through a remote desktop and I can't actually see what they're coding. And so that makes it very, very hard for me to help debug their code since I can't actually see the code. I just have to debug through talking to them.
In addition to Alex and Charlotte Rooley, an 11th grader at BBA, and Isaac Vernon, a BBA 9th grader, the team included Taylor Jarvis, a Burn Burton Academy 11th grader, and Jason Guija, a 7th grader from Long Trail School.
The most fun part was probably designing the robot and then getting to see it to be finished, because you design it all by yourself and with a team, so you get all these different ideas that get integrated all into each other and all made into one final design. And sometimes it turns out the way that you want it to, and sometimes it doesn't, but for this one, I think it turned out pretty well.
The Think Award that the team took a first place in is one of 7 judged awards that were presented at the event, and primarily focuses on the team's use of math and science to drive its engineering design process. At last year's Vermont State Championship, the team's rookie year, they were recognized with a 2nd place for the same award. In addition to Mike Cole, Meg Rooley was another coach, with Bob Rooley and Patty Rutens helping as mentors. The team is a chartered 4-H club by the UVM Extension, and they are always open to having new members join the team, Coach Cole said. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever. A landmark building in Manchester Village is nearing the end of its time. The Music Hall on Union Street will be dismantled over the course of the coming weeks. Efforts to preserve the building have been underway for over 20 years, but the cost of renovating the structure has proven far too great for any investors to take on. The space the building has occupied will be converted for the time being into a parking area. Jay Sheldon, the general manager of the Equinox Resort, which owns the property, told us in a recent interview.
Once the Opera House is taken down, the intent is for it to be used as parking for not only for the hotel, the golf course, but the Village of Manchester, while we take some time and assess what a future use could possibly look like for the resort. It absolutely, that could be the best use of it for everyone involved, but for right now, there's no immediate plans to develop the lot. What we're going to do is have it be a gravel parking lot and kind of continue what it is, the adjacent lot next to it, and then determine if we have a better future use for it over the next few years. This has been a really long, long, thorough process for not only us, but the Conservation Society and the village as well. And unfortunately, at the end, it was determined that we weren't able to find a better use for the building in its current state, and that was probably the safest thing to do for everybody was to take it down.
I'm just wondering, was there any cost estimate ever done as to how much it would have cost to refurbish or renovate or make the building structurally sound again?
I think there was an analysis done, and the cost was so significant that it was deemed that it just wasn't something that anybody was willing to do or take on or would really be cost effective in any way, shape, or form, even with the historical nature of the building. I think the hope and wish was for everybody was that the building could be put to a use, but I think because of the concerns of the safety of the building and the structural integrity, it was just deemed that it was best for us to go ahead and move forward with taking it down. Sure. We're still in the still obtaining all the necessary permits. I mean, we have permits through the city, the Conservation Society, and whatnot around the area. The plan is to move forward with the project as quickly as possible. As you can see, we've erected fencing around it just to keep people out and keep the area secure, because the building, you know, is unsafe at this point in time. Current timeframes, we hope, based upon permitting approval, is that we'll be able to begin this project no later than June.
According to an article published in the Manchester Journal in October 2013, the Development Review Board of Manchester Village originally approved an application by the Equinox Resort and Spa to demolish the former music hall in March of 2012. Shortly after the Equinox received the approval, though, the Preservation Trust of Vermont contacted them about delaying the demolition of the building so that they could potentially try to save it. A one-year extension on its demolition date came and went in August of 2014. In addition to providing the Preservation Trust with additional time to try and find a new buyer, the Equinox also contributed $25,000 on top of the $15,000 put up by the Preservation Trust to perform stabilization work on the building. Sean Harrington, the curator of the Manchester Historical Society, supplied us with some of the history of the building.
Yeah, so the music hall behind me was built in 1868 by Franklin Orvis. The entertainment that happened in the village prior to that time, you know, happened primarily in the courthouse because it was a community gathering place. But as the Equinox House, as more guests came, the need for more entertainment. So, you know, if you didn't have it, he built it. And so he built it in 1868. You know, had an auditorium in the upstairs that could have 500 people in it. They had, you know, a smaller dance floor downstairs. They had a bowling lane in the basement and a, you know, some guest rooms on the top floors. And it was connected to Equinox Junior there by a second floor bridge. And things went along splendidly for a while. You know, Burn Burton used it extensively. You know, any of the vaudeville acts that came through town used it. And then things kind of started quieting down. Probably the most famous person to visit the music hall was President Taft in 1912. He came here, stayed at Hildene for the evening, gave a talk. The place was packed. Sarah Cleghorn came, and she actually noted by then it had been renamed the casino. And she said, I think it was something along the lines of, "For does anyone call it the casino still? I still know it as the music hall." Change doesn't come easy in Manchester, even back then. So, you know, but right around that time, you know, Burn Burton built their gymnasium. So the need for this extra space really kind of fell into, you know, a void. And Franklin Orvis had died in 1900, so they started slowly converting it to staff housing for the Equinox House. So the original music hall behind us where the auditorium was and the stage, all of that is gone. They added another floor, they petitioned the whole thing off, and it was used primarily for storage and employee housing up until the late 60s, early 70s, and then it's been sitting there since. I talked to Paul Broom, who was the executive director of the Vermont Preservation Trust, shortly before he passed away, just kind of going back, saying, are there any Hail Marys left? And the Equinox Corporation has spent tens of thousands of dollars on shoring it up, trying to preserve it, just to find another use for it. And Paul had indicated they went, you know, nationally, internationally, trying to find somebody who would be willing to invest in this, to no avail. And it wasn't like, you know, they worked on it for 45 days. They spent years working on it, studying, throwing it out there, and he just said, he said it's not very often, but we had to pull the plug on our efforts. And it's, if it didn't have a slate roof put on it in 1913, it probably would have imploded 40 years ago. But outside of that, it's been a raccoon condo. Very well evidenced. So it's, you know, it's incredibly sad to see it go. You know, it's certainly the passing of an era, you know, but its original intent, you know, it's been 110 years since it was used for its original intended purposes. So, you know, we shall see. You know, there's some efforts being mounted, but, you know, I think it's 2 minutes to midnight for the music hall, unfortunately.
The building will be dismantled over a period of weeks, not knocked down in one fell swoop. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
Thanks for listening local. For more local content, visit GNAT.tv.